Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime.
Dear old tidal basin, the dockers do fight. The things you see amazing, what's washed up in the night. Clay pipes and broken china, old bones, a rusty shilling. Sights that make you shudder and stories that are chilling. The Thames, a tub of black ink, the flapping of the sails. The smell of exotic spices, old bags of rusty nails. Let's wander to the dockland, yes, dear old Tiger Bay. The clinking of the chains, the bows of ships do sway. Sway, 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 let's dance to a limehouse day. Sway, 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 let's all just drift away. Sway, 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 let's dance to a limehouse day. Sway, 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 let's all just drift away.
The music we're listening to is called Limehouse Sway and it's about Betty May. And today I'm excited to be interviewing Céline Espiche, who is a cabaret performer and who has rediscovered Betty, who is a singer, thief, party animal, wild bohemian, drug taker, gang member and a cocaine lover and a model for many famous artists in the early part of the 20th century. Welcome, Céline, to Radio Gorgeous.
Hello.
So you're in the throes of making a musical around the life of Betty May. How did you? I'd never heard of her, and I thought I was a, you know, I thought I knew a lot about, you know, this era. How did you discover Betty May?
I was outside the Coach and Horses where I used to work, and there was a young gentleman who was used to be a cameraman in Hollywood, and he said, "You remind me of Betty May. You've got the spirit." This was 10 years ago. He said, "You should check her out." When I found the book at the British Library, as soon as I picked it up, I got tingles.
Fantastic. So you found it. Yes. And did you read it there and then, or could you take it away?
No. I couldn't afford to buy the book at the time, so I had to keep it out at the British Library, which for free I got my own desk. Turn your phone off, you go off and write. So it was actually quite beneficial. I don't do the whole life story. I only go up to sort of the late 20s, the Fitzroy Tavern, because you need a two-day fest of Betty May. She was born in Tidal Basin in Canning Town in 1894.
Yeah.
And her mother worked in a chocolate factory. They were really, really, really poor.
They were shockingly poor. Yes. They didn't have beds. They slept in rags.
Yes. Yeah. So it was extremely tough.
And then she went to live with her father, who was a drunk.
Yes, and lived in a brothel in Limehouse. Mm-hmm. So her and her brother would have seen lots of things. Ladies of the night shivering in their shawls. You know, their eyes would have been opened at a very young age. The first kind of inkling of her being into cabaret was as a little girl. She spent some time with an aunt and uncle on a barge and she bought a red scarf and put it in her hair. She's like, "What do you think, auntie?" She's like, "It's ridiculous. Get it out of your hair." And she was in tears. You don't say that to a child, you know. So she went out onto the barge and all these sailors were there and she started dancing and they all threw coins down at her. So she was known along the river for doing her little dances.
She was amazingly beautiful.
Yes.
Now let's describe her. She had a darkish skin and green slanty eyes.
Cat-like eyes.
Stunningly beautiful.
Yes, she was
and very
petite. She had size 2 shoes. She was really...
I couldn't believe that when I read that. I've only met grown-ups with 3s, the smallest. Yeah.
And she said, you know, she'd walk into a room and all heads would turn. She had this aura and beauty.
So let's just go back to, so she hung out sort of in the 10s and 20s with the bohemians. She got married, she did crazy things, she got up and danced, that was her main thing, and sang. She just used any stage, she'd get up.
Yes.
and that's what she kind of lived off, didn't she? She lived off her wits.
Yes.
And but at one point she went to Paris, and can you tell us about that?
Well, basically she was taken to Bordeaux by Pretty Pet, who was some sleazebag who she later finds out lured lots of young, pretty, attractive girls over there. He had other intentions for her, possibly prostitution. But she found a cabaret club and she, you know, got up and danced again. And she met the White Panther, who lured her to Paris. And it turns out he's the chief gang member of La Pache, who are the hardest, most dangerous gang in Paris. And they were nasty, you know. That's where she gained her name, the Tiger Woman.
Yeah, I was going to say, why was she called Tiger Woman?
The initiation was having the fight with Hortense, who was obviously White Panther's lover, and he had this, right, let's see how tough you are, woman. And they described the fight in the book, and it was literally, you know, gizzards being...
Because she was, because, I mean, you know, obviously she kind of, she had a Cockney accent, she was kind of, you know, from a working class background, she might have not been able to find the words, so she did used to have fights with people, didn't she?
Yeah. I think she didn't like being belittled. Mm. And I think, with you know, just because somebody has a higher education, you can't, you know, there are people from all walks of life that are intelligent.
But let's just go back to Betty, because she, then it was the First World War, she got married and sadly her husband died, even though she wasn't being terribly loyal.
I kind of find that period, the reason I've chosen to do the whole kind of 20s, I hone in on the style and the opulence and the
beauty. Because she dressed like a gypsy, didn't she?
Yeah, all calico from Berwick Street Market, but she was quite stylish.
Oh, yeah.
So from her Costa background, as she describes... You know, the gypsy comes out.
She wore every colour. Mm. She was colourful, beautiful, cat-like. And obviously men were entranced by
her.
She
would have loved what you're wearing today, Jess. She had a rainbow of colours.
Oh, well, I did it for Betty May. She had a magnetism, didn't she?
Definitely.
You know, people adored her. And she kind of made, because she'd been in the gang, she made money out of it. I mean, in the way that everyone wanted to know her. And so they'd buy her drinks and food. And so she'd hang out at the Café Royal being a bohemian.
And that's it. You know, I was quite saddened the other day when I found out they've taken the name The Grill Room away and called it the Oscar Wilde Bar. Now, the Café Royal, for me, is a significant gem of the West End. We actually recreate the Grill Room in the show. It was spit and sawdust when she went there. It was old tables and just absinthe. And
must have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Before we did it up.
You had your Epstein and Augustus John, Nancy Cunard, Nina Hamnett.
And she was hanging out. She was friends of all of them, wasn't she?
At the beginning, no, but that was her goal.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yes.
So high society, high bohemian society.
Yeah.
RadioGorgeous.com.
So that's she kept going off to live in the country, getting married. She married one man and she started taking cocaine on her honeymoon.
Mm. I think in that time, we think we're wild now. They were pretty wild then. You could buy cocaine in a postcard on Charing Cross Road. You could buy over the counter. There was ether, laudanum. They were doing wild cocktails, you know, hashish, all of that.
Opium.
Everything.
Yeah.
But it was the pure. It would have been
really good
intense stuff.
So she got addicted.
Yeah.
And she had the self-will to stop being addicted, which again is a sign of a strong character.
Yes.
How did she do that?
Looking at what would be her future, you know, I've lived in Soho, you get lured into it. You've got to be careful. I think she saw the reality of the consequences. And that's what drove her.
Because she was streetwise.
Yes.
Yeah. Then I think a third marriage, she married a sweet undergraduate from Cambridge.
Yes, Raoul Loveday.
And he was a follower of Aleister Crowley.
Okay, initially he was, he was, his interest was Egyptology. And Aleister Crowley was heavily into Egyptology. Crowley tarot cards.
He was a magician.
Right. I've done a lot of research on him and people are like, oh, you don't want to go down there. Ron Hubbard was influenced by him to create Scientology. It's all about, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Are you stressed? Come and do a stress test, Aleister Crowley.
Oh,
come on, I'll show you good magic.
That.
Yeah. So, and it was all drug-based. So, you know, you find people that have a weak tendency, get them to that buzzed point, they're in there.
And he set up in Italy, didn't he?
Yeah, Abbey of Thelema. But the thing was, he wanted Rao. He knew he could get him. He knew he could get him to drink the blood of a cat in that sacrifice. And the reports that I got from Collingdale, the original papers, the Daily Mirror, Daily Express, I'm sorry, show after that incident, they had a very strange ritual outside of the building with goats and things. So there was definitely something that went on in there. And it's still there, the Abbey, it's derelict. And
so he was living there and obviously she...
He became his secretary. He moved there to work with him.
Yeah.
And she went with him.
Yeah, because she went because she was scared.
And they went
and
via
to
Paris
after.
And they were warned, don't go.
Mm-hmm.
But he was too far gone. He was like that. It was like, take me to your leader. hypnotically. That was it. The day he met Alistair was the day his soul was taken.
And he died.
Yes. But Alistair claims that it was the contaminated water on a walk they went to. I don't think so. Nobody drinks cat's blood. Some stray cat from, you know, a village. And it was pretty horrendous.
Yeah, imagine what poisons are in that. Yeah.
Disgusting. You know, the guy was evil. He was screwed up. He also came from a very religious background. Mm. And the consequences of that are people rebel against having religion shoved down their throats.
So Betty escaped again. I mean, it's what she's best at, isn't she? Betty always comes up trumps.
Yeah, but I think this was her true love, and it was really disturbing. It took a long time for her to get over. I think this is the one thing that nearly snapped her. A musical needs a roller coaster journey, and you've got all the elements of that in that book. And I used to hate musicals. I used to find them really cheesy and jazz hands. You know, it's sort of, I wanted to create something quite different with the essence of Lionel Bart, Kurt Vile, that really nitty gritty, smoky voices, sexy dances.
Let's listen to Betty May, written by Celine.
I'm Betty May, Betty May, yes, I am Betty May. I'm Betty May, Betty May, I'll brighten up your day.
You singing as well?
Yeah.
Wow, it's amazing. I'm really excited for you. So there's 22 songs in it, is that?
I've written the original, there are 22, but we're only going to use 19.
Sounds great. Yeah, so how do you write? Do you write with somebody else?
I write all the lyrics, I'm the lyricist. I always find when I can't just write cold lines, there's always a melody that comes through.
So you've written together all the music,
yes.
And have you written the whole musical, every word?
Yes, I finished the book.
And have you performed it yet?
I've done lots of cabarets, but I performed at the Groucho Club. So it's combining not just obviously a musical, but an experience. It would be lovely at the theatres to have a little sample cocktail before you go into the event.
So obviously you've visualised it all. Where's the dream theatre it's going to happen then?
I would love any old school West End. I want it in the West End. It needs to be, you know, like the Harold Pitt, somewhere really cosy and.
And are you the star in it? Are you Betty May?
At the moment, everyone's catching my jumper. Everyone's like, you know her inside out, but there's so many other things. I've just started my next musical all about Nell Gwynn and Charles II's love affair. People don't realise when you are in a show like that, it's 8 shows per week.
Yeah. Physically.
A matinee, you know, I don't know if I want to do that. Mm. I'm very happy until we have the professional casting person. I'm going to be playing her for now. I can't just give it away like that. It sounds awful. And we've had several girls who are all really talented, but they just didn't have, you know, you've got to have some guts and a bit of life experience, I think.
Yeah. Over 2,000 followers, can't be wrong. Follow us on Twitter. Radio_gorgeous. Thanks, darlings. Mwah. So how are you raising money then for the musical?
Initially, I raised development money on my own. I now have the dreaded task, which I shouldn't say dreaded, but it's the Arts Council funding form.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm on that tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my... Yeah. I can't relax.
You've got to do it right, you see. That's the problem. Every bit, every box has got to...
I know.
Sounds excellent. So... When are you saying it's going to be on?
This is the thing. This is the hard part is raising the money. We raised a significant amount for me to be able to set up a production company. I have a business partner called Edwin Philpott. So he's brilliant at marketing and designing all the website.
Yeah, the website's beautiful.
Yeah. But I think the main thing, my priority also for the new year is I was at a seminar on Friday at the V&A. It was Elegance in Fashion Photography from 1910 to 1940. And I want to curate an art show that complements the Betty May.
Oh, that's such a good idea.
I think the main thing is raising awareness, just to get the word out there and really have people talking. You have to create that electricity.
Exactly. What happened to Betty May then? Because the book goes up till 1930, 1929.
It's interesting. A lot of people ask me this question. I went to her grave about a month ago. She was in a pauper's grave. There was no headstone. We couldn't find the actual plot. It was E267. So we knocked on the actual warden's house, who looked like Christopher Lee. I said, please, I've come all the way from London. I've got these little roses. He came out and he actually opened the church, pulled out the actual plot, and he walked us over and he said, I hate to say this, there's probably loads of people in there, but if that's the one, she's in there. And I felt really sunken. And then I thought, no. But I laid the roses down and I said, I'm keeping your spirit living on, Betty, and I won't give up until we get this show up on its legs. And there will be a headstone for you.
And then what? Because it goes up to 1930 and didn't she die in 55? So how old was she?
It was much later than that. She died in the 70s. She outlived everyone. She was 86.
Radio Gorgeous. Podcasts for women. Fascinating. Mm. So
that's the next bit, but I think she went into hiding. Mm-hmm. She'd had enough.
When did she leave Soho then?
She moved to Hampstead. She was living in... I know they lived on Beak Street, so that's in the Raoul Loveday period. So I would... You know, she was still at the Fitzroy Tavern.
Yeah.
Maybe early 30s.
Yeah, sounds about right, yeah. And how old was she in the early 30s? About 20, 30 or... I'm not very good at math.
I would say, 34?
Yeah, sounds... It's when you start slightly slowing down.
You're going, do you know what? Yeah.
Yeah, quite liked.
But to actually write your memoirs, such a... You know, I've been... You, as she closes the book, you may walk away and see...
Say it.
Blimey.
What she says.
Oh, I can say. I can read it.
Let's just hear the end of the book, because Betty May's life is so exciting. I mean, she was only 30 when she wrote this.
And so now I have come to the end of my story. I suppose that at this point I should say something about the way I look at life and give some good advice to others who may be about to embark on a similar career of adventure. Perhaps I ought to, but I certainly shall not do so. For one thing, I look upon my life as only just beginning. I am still young, I have my looks and my energy. The future holds all sorts of things in store for me, probably just as extraordinary as things that have happened to me already. After all, when I used to wander about the East End of London as a child, it did not look as if I should get to know the underworld of Paris, sit for famous artists, be bored in English villages, watch magical rites in Sicily, or really do any of the things that have made up my life, and so I feel completely uncertain about the future. My feeling about my life in many ways one of great dissatisfaction. In spite of my adventures, I do not really think that in many things I have got the best out of it. And yet, when I look back on it, I find it equally difficult to imagine myself behaving in any way differently when I remember the various problems with which I have been faced. In fact, I believe enormously in the overpowering influence of fate, which seems to haunt me equally in good or bad fortune. Against this hidden but all-powerful influence, it seems to me impossible and foolish to rebel. It has brought me joy and it has brought me sadness. No doubt it will bring me both again, but I'm sure that I'm born for adventure and in the future I shall be able to face these things as I have faced them in the past. Sometimes I think I will leave England for a long period. It has crossed my mind to make my way to Africa, to Abyssinia, and again I sometimes decide that I will go to Spain. At present I cannot make up my mind, and for once the way does not seem as clear to me as it has often done in the past, but this will not be for long. The uncertainty will not last. Soon I shall decide. Perhaps I shall disappear for months, for years, but one of these days you will certainly hear of me again and perhaps read of the further adventures of Betty May.
And what's your website address, Celine?
www.bettymaythemusical.com.
Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
It's a pleasure. Lovely to meet you, Josephine.
So magical, so mysterious, so much fun. In all honesty, it's where I most feel at home. Betty May, Betty May, yes, I am Betty May. Betty May, Betty May.
This is a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com, produced and presented by Josephine Pembroke and beautifully edited by Ella Gray Thomas, 2015.